Last Tuesday, Current State started our weekly conversations on environmental issues facing the Great Lakes Basin. The segments are part of a partnership between Current State and MSU's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. And here to discuss the collaboration is David Paulson. Paulson is the Associate Director of the Knight Center for Environmental Journalism, and he's also the editor of the online environmental news magazine, Great Lakes Echo. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me here.
Tell our listeners who are unaware of the Knight Center about the Knight Center for Environmental Journalism.
Well, the center is a unit of the School of Journalism. We've been around about 18 years, and we like to think that we're the longest and the best program for training journalists to cover complex environmental issues, translating them for the public.
In the country.
In the country, absolutely. And so we have undergraduate program, we have a graduate program. We do a significant amount of outreach to professional journalists in helping them tell the environmental story.
You're editor of the Great Lakes Echo. What does the Great Lakes Echo cover? Give us some examples.
Well, we do a lot of straight-up news, the type of thing that that people might be real familiar with in terms of environmental issues, pollution, wetland restoration, wetland destruction, climate change, energy. But we also like to have a little bit of fun, too. We try to get a little creative in terms of reaching our public. Last week, we had a story about the impact of the new Pope on Great Lakes policy. And the idea isn't...
Huh.
That's
an angle I would not have thought of real quickly.
Well,
tell us about that.
Well, there's not a Great Lakes office in the Vatican, but we are a religion is a very fascinating source of environmental inspiration and, interestingly, a source of environmental communication, and it's a way of getting of reaching a certain segment of the public on environmental issues.
Very interesting. Who produces your content then?
Well, we have a variety of sources. Students produce our content, both graduate and undergraduate students. We have a paid staff. We hire professional freelancers. Some of them are alums of our program. From time to time, they contribute to it. Faculty contribute to it. And in kind of an exciting development this year, we've begun to partner with other journalism schools throughout the Great Lakes Basin. So, for instance, the University of Minnesota's School of Journalism in Duluth has produced several real fascinating looks at Lake Superior for us. Kent State University has produced some kind of mini documentaries on farming and mining and other things as well.
And for our listeners who are sitting there thinking, why spend all of this energy just on reporting about the environment? Why this emphasis? Make your case for a particular focus on reporting environmental news.
Well, there's a lot of real important stories out there, but we would make the argument that nothing trumps the fate of the planet, that everything is based... all these very complex political and other issues have their roots in resource issues, in environmental issues. And some of these are very, very complex, and so it's kind of incumbent upon the journalists to explain that complexity to the public. That's why we're real excited about this partnership here with Current State. You guys tackle some really good issues that everybody's interested in, and we think the environment should be front and center in those issues that get discussed.
We're excited about it, too. That's David Paulson. He's Associate Director of the Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. He's also the editor of Great Lakes Echo, where there are a wide range of stories covering the Great Lakes, and you can hear Current State's environmental segment every Tuesday, including this Tuesday. Thanks very much, Dave.
Thanks, Mark.
It's been 100 years since the International Joint Commission conducted a Great Lakes-wide bacteriological study. Scientists are now looking to recreate the 1913 study. The 100-year study will assess how water quality in the Great Lakes Basin has changed over time. Lead researcher Dr. Joan Rose is the Nowland Center Chair of Water Research, co-director of the Center for Water Sciences, and co-director of the Center for Advancing Microbial Risk Assessment here at Michigan State. Dr. Rose said they started the study in 1913 because people were getting sick.
During that time, they were having a lot of typhoid outbreaks, and drinking water was the problem. So people were drinking the water, the wastewater was going into our water supply, and people were getting sick. And in fact, some of the largest outbreaks occurred in Detroit and Chicago. and people were getting sick and dying. And in the early 1900s, Canada and the U.S. recognized the value of the Great Lakes, and they created an agreement to manage the Great Lakes together. And one of the first things they realized was that there was this great, you know, layer of pollution, you know. And so they did this study using the most advanced microbiological techniques of the time to look at the fecal pollution around the Great Lakes. It was spread completely across the whole region. And it's still today, 100 years later, one of the largest studies ever done on a large water basin.
Hmm. Now, the new study you're looking to do is, in a sense, is to recreate this 1913 study. Is it fair to ask what you're expecting to find?
You know, we get asked all the time, has the water gotten better or worse?
Sure.
What's the water quality like? And so many things have changed. Our instinct is to say, for sure, the water has gotten better. We're smarter. We're treating our wastewater now. We have the Clean Water Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act. But then we start to think about it a little bit more. There's more people. There's more animals. There's more waste going into our system. There's more combined sewer overflows. Climate has changed. We certainly know that in the last 20 years, we're getting greater precipitation, which leads to more stormwater. We've lost wetlands. So there's so many things that have changed, and we really haven't looked at this historical perspective over this long time to answer that simple question. Has our water quality gotten better or worse in the Great Lakes in regard to fecal pollution?
And you hope this study will once and for all answer that question.
We think that this study will help us answer that. And we'd like to, there's you know, the resources in the Great Lakes, it's not just the water resources, it's the intellectual resources. Both on the Canada and the U.S. side, there's so many great scientists that have been studying this system. And we have a lot of data. In fact, right in Lake Sinclair, we looked at data from the 1940s all the way to current time where they'd been monitoring their water quality. And we took it out of old notebooks that had been handwritten. And it was amazing, you know, the amount of data that's out there. So we think that there's data out there to be mined that we can analyze. And we also think that in the last 5 years, the new techniques are giving us new insight into pollution, not just how much pollution is there, but where is it coming from? Because that's the second question that we've always been asking and never been able to answer.
Now, are you referring to technology creating pollution, or are you talking about technology detecting pollution,
yeah,
or both?
I'm talking about both, but in this regard, I'm talking about the new technology that allows us to test water. And when we take a sample, we're able to identify the source of the fecal pollution. This is called microbial source tracking. And it's sort of the CSI of water, we like to call it, you know, the CSI of water. And we use some of the same techniques that you see on television shows and in the courtroom. We actually look at the DNA of bacteria in water. And we can tell whether it's come from sewage in humans or whether it's come from birds.
How about that? So fecal pollution is still a focus of the current study?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It's very interesting. In 1913, of course, they were very worried about drinking water and people, you know, getting quite ill. And in today, 100 years later, we've seen a shift, and partly because of engineering technology in treating our drinking water, but we've seen this shift from worrying so much about drinking water, because we've done a very good job there, to worrying about our beaches, our coastline, our ecosystems, and the economics, you know, that coastline provides, both from fishing and tourism, all kinds of things. So we've seen a shift, and there's certainly what appears to be in the record an increasing threat of fecal pollution to our shoreline.
Who's working on the study?
We have a very large group very interested in this study. We have about 20 core people that are coalescing together, and they represent scientists from NOAA, the Great Lakes Environmental Research Lab, from the USGS. They represent scientists at health departments and state agencies, as well as private laboratories and academic scientists like myself. And so we have a very large group representing almost every state in the U.S. That border the Great Lakes and on the Canada side as well.
There's a lot of different work being done in the Great Lakes, and a lot of those studies take a lake-by-lake approach. This study you're embarking on is basin-wide. Why look basin-wide, and what might we learn that we wouldn't studying lake-by-lake?
When you start to look at time and space, changes over time and space, we get a better sense of our lessons learned on what we should do right. There are some site-specific issues that we need to address. But what's interesting, if you look at these maps, this is the original GIS in 1913, hand-drawn maps of the pollution, and you look at those and you overlay them with today's areas of concern, they are very, very similar. And so we know where these hotspots are. What we don't know about these hotspots is, are they similar in terms of sources of pollution, health risk, and management strategies to control that pollution?
Looking globally, the Great Lakes are the largest group of freshwater lakes on Earth. The Great Lakes must have an impact globally as well. Am I right?
Yeah. When you look at all the international basins around the world, and there's something like 260-some water systems that are shared by more than one country, and in some cases, three, four, five countries. The Great Lakes is still, Canada and the U.S. still has the best agreement around water quality. And when you think about it, quantity, when we think about quantity, a glass of water, how much water's flowing in that stream, how much rain falls, how much stormwater, et cetera, we can get our arms around quantity. But quality is very complex. It's what contaminants, where are they coming from? Do they cause us harm? How do we get rid of them? Are there new contaminants? So it's so complex. And the Great Lakes has a water quality agreement that is a model for all over the world. And water quality equals health. There's no doubt about it. Equals health for humans, equals health for animals and our wildlife, our ecosystem, and our economics. So water quality is health. And we need to get our arms around that. And I think the Great Lakes Agreement, the studies that have gone on in the past, and the new work that's going to happen in the Great Lakes is really a model globally for the big basins, the Ganges River in India, the Yangtze in China, and we can go on and on. There's just such so much need for good science to address water quality and health in the future.
Has it been a long time since a lot of those global water systems have been studied, just like in the Great Lakes? Has it been decades or years?
Yes, and in many cases, it's so piecemeal in the rest of the world in terms of studying water quality that you really can't even find a map of water quality globally around fecal pollution. You can find some maps on arsenic and fluoride, some of the groundwater pollutants that are naturally occurring because they're part of the geological formation. But if you try to find a good global map on water quality, you cannot find one. And some of these very important systems, the World Bank is going to fund a lot of money for restoration of the Ganges. Look at what we've been doing in the Great Lakes in terms of restoration, protection, and addressing future concerns. This is a global model. There's no doubt about it.
Dr. Joan Rose is the Nolan Endowed Chair of Water Research, co-director of the Center for Water Sciences, and co-director of the Center for Advancing Microbial Risk Assessment at Michigan State University. She is the lead researcher on the 100-year study, which is reevaluating water quality in the Great Lakes a century after the International Joint Commission 1913 project. Dr. Rose, thanks very much.
Well, thanks for having me.